what's going on, everybody? Welcome on into First Take. Thanks for being here with us. I'm Charlie Arnold. We got Max Kellerman here. Happy New Year, by the way, Max. Haven't seen you yet since 2021 has begun.
Happy New Year.
Ryan Clark also here with us. And guys, we have, as you just heard, some good news and some bad news to begin today's show. The good news, of course, Wild Card Weekend is upon us. The Browns in the postseason for the first time in 18 years. The bad news, though, they will be without one of the key elements of their team, that being their head coach, and that is because Kevin Stefanski has tested positive for COVID-19 along with two other coaches and also two other players. The game is still expected to go on as scheduled, and in making the announcement yesterday, the Browns said special teams coordinator Mike Prefer will serve as the acting head coach. Max, do you think that Baker can upset the Steelers without their head coach?
Yes, I do. I think he can. And in fact, I'm not backing off the pick even without Stefanski, who is the coach of the year, in my opinion. Look, Baker Mayfield looked to me like he had something special in college. And he looked to the Browns also because they used the number one overall pick in the draft on him, even though he didn't have a great 40 time and he wasn't that tall. And he had a big enough arm. It was a big, but there were guys with bigger arms. And he was accurate, but it wasn't like he was Drew Brees or someone like that, right? But they saw something special in him. They drafted him number one overall. Ryan Clark, it was you who said, I think, the most devastating thing about Baker Mayfield on this show, on First Take. Eventually, at some point earlier in this season, you said, look, he's just all right. He's okay. And that was devastating in terms of the perception of Baker Mayfield. And I resisted it at first. You know, look, he's had something special once. What happened? Well, maybe it was, you know, Oklahoma and the Big 12 and guy receivers were wide open and he really wasn't that good. And I kind of bought into that after a while. But you know what? He turned it around and he's looking kind of special again. Is he independently great? Like, is he great no matter what the circumstance, like Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes? Or, you know, no, he's not that guy. Even a guy like Justin Herbert, you can see more talent, right? He's not that guy. He's like most quarterbacks. It depends on the circumstance. So when he had Hugh Jackson, the worst coach in football that year, he was no good. Greg Williams, he got better, but Greg Williams made a call, play call so bad this year, he's out of football maybe permanently now, right? Freddie Kitchens was maybe the worst coach that season, or one of them. And he finally got a good coach, and you can see in the right circumstances, he can ball. He can ball. But Ryan, here's the thing. Just because Stefanski's not there doesn't mean the circumstances aren't right for Baker Mayfield. He's got an excellent offensive line. Like, a head coach, as you know better than I do. It's like in boxing when you see a corner man. Yeah, important work is done in the corner on the night of the fight, but is that the most important work? No, the most important work is in the training camp, right? Coming up with strategy, making sure you're in shape, making sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. All the technique is right. The attitude is right. That's what Stefanski's done. It's not like a zone blocking scheme in the run game goes away because Stefanski's not there.
Yeah.
It's not like,
yeah, but
arguably, certainly an elite offensive line goes away because Stefanski's not there. That stuff's still there. So the question is, do you believe that Baker Mayfield can deliver under pressure? I do.
Listen, I don't disagree that Baker Mayfield at times can deliver under pressure. This is not going to be an attack and trash Baker Mayfield session for me because we've watched throughout the second half of this season, Tennessee Titans, Baltimore Ravens. You go back to the game they lose Odell Beckham Jr. against the Cincinnati Bengals. We've seen him be special. But all of those special moments go and coincide with Kevin Stefanski. There's not a time we come on this show on a Monday morning and we're talking, Max or Stephen A. is talking, and we separate Baker Mayfield and Kevin Stefanski. Everything that we see about his growth, the things we see about his progression, the things we see about his success come from Kevin Stefanski being able to manage Baker Mayfield through the run game and dial up the correct plays to get people open and put Baker Mayfield in the situation to where he's comfortable. That's gone. And I know you talk about the head coach and the work being done throughout the week, schematically, putting the programs together, making sure everything is set in the right place. But they don't get that, right? Even though they're on Zoom calls and he can be a part of that, he doesn't get to watch it on the field and see Baker Mayfield go through it and correct it. And the other part about this, Dominique said something very, 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 very smart this morning. He said, you know, the decision making and the analytics of being a head coach, some of those things are science, right? They're scientific. You can teach somebody those, or you can hand somebody a sheet that says, this is when you go for two. This is when you go for it on fourth down. But play calling is an art. And one, in artistry, right, you have to have a level or a base level of talent, right? You have to have a level of talent to be able to do that. Kevin Stefanski has that. But the art part of it is that I can feel, I can move. When this line is a little bit off, I know how to change that and adjust that and make that work. That's what Kevin Stefanski has been for this team. When the run game needed to be great, he understood how to get it there. When he knew he had to get a big fourth down conversion, he knew that it was best to give Baker Mayfield the ball as a keeper so he could have an extra blocker. These are all the things that Kevin Stefanski knows and feels that have allowed Baker Mayfield to be in this position. They're missing other offensive coaches. They don't have an opportunity to get in the building. And this team hasn't had any continuity for 3 weeks. And by the way, the Pittsburgh Steelers looked a little good on defense against the Cleveland Browns. Mason Rudolph was able to get the ball down the field, even though Ward and Johnson were out in the back end for Cleveland. And I think they've seen some things that say right now the Pittsburgh Steelers are a better team than the Cleveland Browns. And I believe Kevin Stefanski is worth at least a touchdown. They do not win this game.
Well, look, is it harder for them to win? Yes. And after I said the thing about cornermen, you know, Cassius Clay, before he was Muhammad Ali, right before, fought Sonny Liston, and Liston's corner rubbed, you know, liniment on his gloves. It got in Clay's eyes. He couldn't see. He wanted to quit. His corner man, Angelo Dundee, had to push him out. Or maybe he loses. I'm not discounting play calling for Stefanski in a title fight here, right? Like, which is what it is, even though it's the first round. It's AFC
right, sure.
North, Steelers, Browns, third meeting this year. Here's something, though, that you're not taking into consideration, I don't think. The Steelers destroyed the Browns the first time. They curb-stomped
yes.
them the first time they played. The next time they played, now, the Browns win. Now, was it closer than it ought to have been, considering no Roethlisberger? Yes, it was, but clearly a trend in the right direction. You have an ascending team in Cleveland and a Baker Mayfield who's going to have to put his big boy pants on, right? He's not going to have Stefanski there, not just for confidence, but you're right, for play calling. And Stefanski controls the offense. He is going to have to do it himself. This is one of those moments where they are underdogs. The odds are stacked against them. They are on the road. They are supposed to lose. Do you think Baker Mayfield is the kind of guy who can get you a win there? And what does that really mean? Because they're going to run the ball, and they really can. They can block for the run, and they got backs who can really run. Do you think that Baker can complete the necessary plays down the field to get it done? I do. That's the bottom line, is I believe that he can do it.
But you got to get there. Max, you got to get there, though. You got to get to the point to where you're in position to make those plays, to where you're comfortable enough to make those plays. And that's what Kevin Stefanski has done. I think we're continuing to miss that what Kevin Stefanski did was raise Baker's baseline, right? He raised his floor, and then he allowed him to exceed his ceiling that we'd seen. That's what Kevin Stefanski does. And being there on game day is a part of that. And being there in the biggest moments or the bigger moments for Baker Mayfield is a part of that. We've seen Baker Mayfield, even when he was the best player in college football, have a second half against Georgia where he didn't make those plays. And so, though there is some comfort in that, we've seen him be better. This is a moment that he's never been in. This is a moment, you talk about it being a title fight. This is a title fight and a title shot that he's never gotten the opportunity to go to have. And it's against a six-time world champion. It's against a two-time world champion quarterback. It's against a Super Bowl head coach. And that's a different atmosphere. And to go into that atmosphere, with, like
well
you said, without your cornerman is tough. And I believe that this is going to be difficult for Baker
Mayfield.
Well
said.
Mm-hmm.
Well said. But you know what? None of that changes. Pittsburgh doesn't have a running game. Like, you know, like, everything you said is true, but Pittsburgh still can't run the ball.
Yeah, not to mention these two teams playing in back-to-back weeks. Guys, the Browns facility remains closed this morning. They are still doing the contact tracing, so we'll see how all that shakes out before their game on Sunday. But let's talk about the Cowboys now. Their season is over, which means that the team can now pick up negotiations for hopefully a long-term deal with their quarterback, Dak Prescott. Dallas coming off a disappointing 6-10 season, only having won 4 of 11 games without Dak. Jerry Jones acknowledging Dak is in a good position regarding contract talks. Listen.
I don't know how you could have any more leverage. His evolving into an NFL quarterback has been nothing short of a perfect picture. He has great ability in my mind to win games. And so he has all the things, as substantiated by what we've offered. You wouldn't be offering Dak what's been offered him in the past had you not thought he was very special. The issue is how do you come together, and that's no stranger to me. I've been doing it all my life. I got here putting things together. We've got to get it together.
Max, do you think that Jerry should be concerned about a long-term deal for Dak?
Yes, I do. And look, what Jerry said is true. He's not lying there. And the fact is, Dak has not only been a nearly perfect leader for this team, he's been a nearly perfect soldier for the franchise. Right? As controversy swirled, he towed the company line as closely as he hewed to it as closely as he could. I mean, Jerry Jones, how much more could you ask for from a guy, both as a soldier and as a leader, as a general on the field? So he has a tremendous value to this team, and obviously with Dak, they would have won the division, right? He's worth at least a couple games over what the Cowboys got. So, yeah, he's got a ton of leverage. But should he be worried or concerned about giving him a long-term deal? Guys, let's just think about this clearly. What draft class did he come out with? And now, he wasn't the first and second picks like Goff and Wentz, but he's with those guys, fourth round. Let's look at those contracts. How about the Wentz contract? You see how hysterically laughable it is when it leaks, when Chris Mortensen reports, who does a great job, of course, but look what they're telling him. Oh, we expect a hefty return for Carson Wentz, as though he has an iota of value on the market given that contract. They are going to have to include draft capital just to get someone to take that stinking contract. Jared Goff. Even if he's healthy, Sean McVay 2 days ago would not answer who's going to start in the playoffs between him and Wolford. Like, wouldn't answer the question. Jerry Jones offered Dak Prescott a deal in line with the Wentz and Goff deals, right? Dak's agent, apparently, turned it down. They wanted an earlier out to take advantage of what they will believe is a better CBA for Dak going forward. More money. So if he can opt out early, get a shorter deal, he'll make more money when he re-ups. Now, what wound up happening? Dak promptly missed the season, most of the season. So if you would have given him $30, $35 million a year over the course of that deal, when you take a year out, you're giving him more like $45, $50 million a year. Is he worth that? I mean, like, just right as they tried to give him the deal, he turned it down and immediately had a catastrophic injury. Because of the injury risk in football, because of the lopsided kind of distribution of the salary cap toward quarterbacks, most of whom are not worth it. There's Patrick Mahomes, there's one or two guys, Aaron Rodgers, who are worth it, the kind of percentage of the cap they get. The rest of the guys aren't. Dak falls into the aren't category, in fact, if you're really trying to make the best team you can. So should he be concerned? He dodged a bullet this year.
No, injuries are a part of the game, but the Dak injury isn't anything based on the way that he plays football. The Dak injury is based in the fact that he plays football. Those things are going to happen from time to time, and Dak is going to be healthy this year. Dak is going to be ready to roll, and you can't base Dak Prescott's contract off of what Carson Wentz became or what Jared Goff became. And listen, when in this league, sometimes your absence makes people understand how much you're worth. I remember the year I got sick, which was 07, and you remember that's the guarantee year against Tom Brady, and the Pittsburgh Steelers weren't great on defense. When I was clear, when I finally got out of the hospital and they told me that I can work out, I walk into the room with the defensive back coach, who I was never his guy, right? Even when I won the job, he told me early in the season, we're still going to work somebody else and we're still going to give them series. And I was like, well, why would you do that? When we were in a competition, I clearly beat them up. It's because they saw me as an undrafted free agent, kind of how Dallas sees Dak Prescott as a fourth round draft pick. And he said, we know now how important you were to this team. If you're healthy, if you can play, you're the guy, no questions asked. Well, that's what Dak Prescott is now. If he's healthy, if he can play, he's the guy, no questions asked. His worth has been proven to this team. What they are offensively without Dak, as opposed to what they are with him, is such a large gap that now you have no leg to stand on, Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is telling the truth. I wouldn't have offered him what I offered him in the first place if we didn't value. Now you value him. Now you have to value him higher. And so it's not about, oh, let's hedge our bets because maybe the ankle isn't right, or let's hedge our bet because Carson Wentz didn't play as well after his contract, or Jared Goff didn't play as well after his contract. That's not how it works. When a guy comes out and earns his money, you give him his money. And if you don't want to give Dak Prescott his money, you run the risk of not having him. What did it look like when you didn't have him this year? And Jerry Jones has to assess that. Jerry Jones has to understand
why he didn't have him this year.
And he also has to relate because he got injured. But you also have to look at that as it relates to Jerry Jones's GM and real life mortality. Do you want to start this thing all over again, Jerry? Or do you believe Dak Prescott is a good enough quarterback that if you surround him with the right pieces, you win the Super Bowl? And I think you feel that way about Dak Prescott. And so to me, this is a no-brainer. Get the deal done. Obviously, it's not Patrick Mahomes money, but it's good money. He's one of the top paid quarterbacks in this league. And you move on and try to win football games.
Ryan, know who didn't have a leg to stand on? Dak Prescott. That's why he didn't play this year. I mean, that's the reality.
And
in terms of like, well, you said it, not me. You said not a leg to stand on. That's low-hanging fruit. Look, the fact of the matter is, I would also give him the deal in line with what they offered him. They may have to sweeten it a little bit now. But the question is not, do you give him the deal or not? The question is, are you concerned? You have to be. Look, the fact of the matter is there's a hard cap in football, which means to pay Peter, you must rob Paul, right? Like, there's no way around it. Those are resources you cannot direct elsewhere. That is why the rookie deal window is so important in the NFL. And Dak is out of that now. They milked it for everything. Their real mistake was they milked that for everything it was worth, and they should have, you know, hedged a little bit by giving him a really nice deal like a year and a half ago. They didn't. That's not what happened. So now they're 100%. Faced with the reality that they're going to have to overpay him. He is not Patrick Mahomes. He is not Aaron Rodgers. We hope he continues to develop into a truly great player. He is not that yet. He's a good player right now. He's a good player at a very important position who's about to be paid great money. How has that worked for most of the league? It hasn't.
Yeah. And I think the other piece of this is, too, is you got to look at him. Where do you see him, I guess, when you look at a guy like Deshaun Watson? A guy like Deshaun Watson who has, over the length of the contract, the most money per year, right? And so you look at that and you say, if you're the Houston Texans, do you regret giving him that deal? You're a 4-12 team. I don't think you do. I think you look at Deshaun Watson and say you did the right thing. You look at Deshaun Watson and say, we can build around him for the future. So it's not just necessarily about, I'm not saying Dak is Deshaun. I'm talking about giving a deal to a quarterback like that, who is that important to your team, which I feel like Dak is that important to the Dallas Cowboys. Yes. I'm not talking about comparing them and who's better and their importance to their team. Yes, Dak is that important to the Dallas Cowboys. That is Dak.
A good
is that
point.
Important
you can't
to
go 8-8 without Dak.
To the leadership, shut up, to the leadership of this team. And so when you look at what Dak Prescott has done for this team, what they were without him, I think you give him that money and you don't doubt it. You don't question it. And you understand that you have your leader for the next 4 years and a very good quarterback that you can win with. And I believe that you can win big with if you do the right things. I believe Jerry hasn't done the right things outside of Dak, and he also messed up this Dak deal 2 years ago by not getting it done then.
I think the offensive line enjoyed it. He's a great player, and you know, he's got a lot of enthusiasm, and why wouldn't he? I mean, we didn't take anything by it. He's a heck of a young player, and hopefully our guys can protect him. But it was obviously a talk in the locker room this morning.
Yeah, Chase Young definitely a savage for those comments. Max, do you think that Brady is under the most pressure this weekend?
I do. I think he's under the most pressure. It sounds ridiculous, right? Six-time Super Bowl champion, the greatest of all time, the GOAT under the most pressure. Yeah, man. In this weekend? I'm not talking about the entire playoffs. This weekend? You're playing a sub-500 team. You're playing a sub-500 team whose quarterback was done a long time ago and then came back and then was hurt again, and they had to get rid of the other guy who they thought was going to be their quarterback, and they're just starting to figure things out. You have to beat that team, particularly when you went to a place with an embarrassment of riches on offense You brought your security blanket in Gronk. They had a really good defense. And by the way, I give Brady credit. I'm not saying, oh, Brady just set himself up for success. He did. But you got to give him credit, and I do. He played exceptionally well, particularly as the season went on. This is a Bucs team that is peaking at just the right time. And do I think that has something to do with Tom Brady and his wisdom that comes with that experience and his own greatness and leadership? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. But for all those reasons, what possible excuse could he have for losing to Washington in the first round? For losing, you said it yourself, the weak link in the NFC playoffs. Let's be honest, in the playoffs, period, in the NFL, they are a sub-500 team. You have to beat them. By the way, you know who was Tom Brady before Tom Brady was Tom Brady? Joe Montana. He was the original GOAT. Just like Tom Brady's numbers, Peyton Manning's usually looked better, but when the money was on the line, you liked Tom Brady, and how much of that was Belichick and how much of that was him? Montana went through the same thing with Dan Marino. Montana was one with all the championships, but he didn't have as much obvious talent as a guy like Marino, but he had Joe Walsh, and he had this system and everything. Then he went to KC at the end of his career because they had Steve Young. The 49ers had Steve Young. And he goes to KC, and what happens? He quarterbacks them to the AFC Championship.
AFC
game,
Championship.
Right? That's the kind of stuff we're expecting from Tom Brady. Yep. We're expecting him to guide the Bucs on a playoff run.
It sounds good.
This is a double-digit win team.
Sounds good, Max. And I think you're thinking of this for the first time, very like too small. Right? You're like, oh, because he's playing a team that he should beat and all that. Yeah. Whatever. You're thinking about, so you can come in and talk about this ravine or this cliff or this ditch or a canal or whatever it will be that Tom falls in.
It happens to be tilting up, but I didn't know.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing. What about Lamar Jackson, though, Max? What about the guy that's never won a playoff game? That in the last 2 years, even when he's the league MVP, loses to the Tennessee Titans, who, by the way, I think they're playing again. Who he lost to this season in an overtime run by Derrick Henry. The Lamar Jackson that no matter what happened throughout this regular season, if he played well and was the season's regular season MVP, or if he played like he did kind of in the middle and now had to pick it up toward the end of the season, we were going to be questioning, does Lamar have what it takes to win in the playoffs? Can Lamar Jackson, with what we perceive as his limitations as a passer, being the lead runner on a team, win a playoff game? Can you get to a Super Bowl that way? That's the question we were asking of Lamar Jackson before the season started. And then now, the Lamar Jackson who didn't win the AFC North, who is just one of the three teams that gets in, two teams that got in by wild card, who isn't a Pro Bowler, right? Who isn't in the MVP conversation. Now he has to go to Tennessee, and now that his heights of individual play are no longer there, there's only one question. Are you good enough to win playoff games? And Tom Brady, if Tom Brady loses this will be a blip on the radar of Tom Brady. When we talk about his resume, when they give him his Hall of Fame jackets and we talk about his accolades, they won't even mention if he loses this game to the Washington football team. If Lamar Jackson loses this game to the Tennessee Titans, even if he plays well, everything about this will point to Lamar not being able to do it. Will point to Lamar's skill set not being enough for this team to win in crunch time in January. Because that's all we've cared about all season. Tom Brady, yes. When Tom Brady goes to Tampa and he has this embarrassment of riches, we think to ourselves, okay, they have an opportunity to win the Super Bowl. Because that's what the GOAT does. He got six of them. He's been to nine of them. But with Lamar Jackson, it's a question of going forward in the future. You can see him doing this. He has to win this game. And I know it's on the road. I know the Tennessee Titans are the AFC South champions. But if Lamar Jackson doesn't win this game, we are going to talk about it for 365 days until he gets another chance. If he gets another chance. This is all about Lamar. The pressure on him to prove to people it works.
Look, Ryan, I'm not arguing there's not pressure on Lamar Jackson. I'm the original. It's not that he can't beat good teams. He's beaten plenty of good teams. He can't beat the teams he needs to beat, right? He can't beat the Pittsburgh Steelers with Roethlisberger. He can't beat the Chiefs, and he can't win in the playoffs. There's enormous pressure on Lamar Jackson, no question. But you said it yourself. He's playing the champions of a division. He's playing a very good team. He's playing a team that you know, a lot of people think are going to win the game, right? No one thinks Washington's going to beat the Bucks.
Max, we won't talk about Lamar when we come in here.
Lamar
if
Jackson,
Lamar loses to Tennessee, we won't talk about it. If Lamar loses to Tennessee, will that not be one of the lead stories of First Take?
Yes, not as much as if Tom Brady loses to Washington, though. Look, Lamar Jackson losing to Tennessee would be understandable, but it would hurt him. You're right. Even if he has a great game, people will still bring it up. I'll still bring it up because the details get fuzzy, and sometimes there's not enough time to really get into the details, and so it just gets swept into the pile of another big game he couldn't win. You're right. I'm not arguing against that. That is true, but presumably Lamar Jackson has years ahead of him. Right, in a very good organization to take more and more cracks. Tom Brady, do you realize, is turning 167 years old next year? You know, Tom Brady presumably has much less road ahead of him. And he cannot lose to a 7-win team on a team that is as stacked as the Bucks. Can't happen. You know what we'll say? Yeah, it's true. Bill Belichick went 7-9 without Tom Brady. There were lots of reasons for that. COVID and all types of stuff, right? And they go set, and Tom Brady left him without the quarterback and all the whole thing. 7-9. Tom, that's different than losing in the playoffs to a 7-9 team when you have every single thing you can ask for. By the way, including a coach in Bruce Arians, who whatever you want to say about no risk it, no biscuit versus dink and dunk and how would that mesh? The fact is Bruce Arians has pressed all of the right buttons with Tom Brady and this team this year. There would be no excuses for a loss to Washington.
Listen, it's not about excuses, right? It's about Tom. Tom has built up so much in our emotional bank account of us understanding who he is. This is not going to be something that mars his career. Lamar Jackson has one huge question. We don't question if he's talented. We don't question if he's a good enough quarterback to win in the regular season. We don't question any of those things. We question, can he win the playoffs? He's been two times and he's lost. This will be 3-3. Who Tom Brady is done, bro. It's etched in stone. All he can ever do is continue to elevate. All he can ever do is continue to create more separation between him and the next guy. Losing this game doesn't knock Tom Brady back into the frame of everybody else.
We want to see what Brady does under pressure without Belichick. That's what this whole year is about. Belichick doesn't look great right now, missing the playoffs without Brady. How's Brady going to look if he doesn't win a game against a 7-win team in the first round of the playoffs when his team is stacked? We will say, people will say, look what Brady did without Belichick.
Right, and what he did was he got a team to the
play. I think if I were Tom Brady, I would be highly embarrassed to lose to the Washington football team in the playoffs. All right, we have some breaking news right here on First Take. Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence has officially announced he will be entering the 2021 NFL Draft. He made the announcement in a video today, posted to Twitter, simply tweeting, "Thank you, Clemson," and then the video was him walking around on the field at Memorial Stadium. So coming off of that news, we now welcome in the mouth of the South, Paul Feinbaum. Paul, I want to know your reaction to this news that he's entering the draft.
It's the least surprising thing that I've heard in 2021, 2020, and pretty much any other year. He was always going to go. I think it depended on whether he would go to the Jets, if that indeed turned out to be his destination, which is not going to be the case. But he's had a remarkable career, and I quite frankly think he may not ever get enough credit because he did not win the Heisman Trophy. He won one national championship his first year, and last year lost to Joe Burrow, and this year obviously didn't make it to the final game. But he's one of the most remarkable players I have ever seen. I think he will have a sensational pro career, but he brought such, I thought, class to college football, such dignity, and you know, one of those guys that we will remember back many, many years from now when he ascends into greatness in the NFL and go, why didn't he win the Heisman Trophy? And I'm sure Peyton Manning will second that notion.
Paul, you know, when I think about ballyhooed quarterbacks out of college, it seems to me Trevor Lawrence comes in with as much hype among the people who seem to know as anyone since Andrew Luck. And while Andrew Luck had an excellent career, I really like Andrew Luck. He's a very good quarterback. It's not like the career performance quite matched the hype, right? He retired early, and he was never the best quarterback in the league, though there were times where he looked like maybe a top five kind of guy. What do you expect when you say a sensational career? What do you expect from Trevor Lawrence?
I don't know why I can't get Peyton Manning out of my head, Max, but the reason I say that is, I'd seen him play many, many times on television, but 2 years ago, standing on the sidelines out at Santa Clara, seeing him up close for the first time, I saw that big guy out there, 6'5", 6'6", and he looked like Peyton Manning, just towering over the field, and he was playing Alabama. It wasn't like he was playing Wake Forest. And he shredded them that night. It was one of the most embarrassing losses of Nick Saban's career. And I just have seen him, even though he's been great in college, don't misunderstand the point. To me, he is the prototypical pro quarterback. And I would like to know what more he'll have around him in Jacksonville, but that's just my gut feeling, and that's all you can do. It's easy to miss on college quarterbacks coming out, but I really do think Trevor Lawrence is as can't miss a quarterback as we have seen in a number of years, many years.
Paul, the national championship game, Alabama-Ohio State, scheduled still to take place on Monday despite there being some COVID issues within the Buckeyes program. They do have a backup date in mind, that would be January 18th, but what would it take for them to actually postpone that game?
I don't think it's going to be postponed for this reason. I think there is such a will by really both sides. And I think the off-the-field chatter about Ohio State wanting to postpone because Justin Fields is hurt is a little bit overblown. There are legitimate concerns on the Ohio State side. They haven't told us, but many sources have confirmed that they have a couple of defensive players with COVID issues. And I think ultimately it just depends on what the contact tracing looks like. And we don't know yet. I mean, it would have to be pervasive. But certainly I think everyone in college football wants this game to go off Monday night, because the real danger, I don't want to go other than the pandemic, but if this game does not get played Monday night, the importance of it really begins to shrink for the obvious reason. The NFL playoffs just suck all the oxygen out of the sports coverage. And I think it would be hard to regenerate that a week from Monday night. It's a challenge for college football anyway, playing on the Monday night following the wild card weekend, especially with an additional game on Saturday and Sunday. But I think it's really up to, Ohio State would just simply have to say, we don't have enough players. We can't do it. I know the other side, Alabama, wants to get this game in. They're relatively healthy. They have Waddle coming back. Would another week matter to them? But they don't care about that. They just want to see the game being played, and I think everyone does.
Paul, Nick Saban's daughter tweeted out some skepticism concerning Ohio State's COVID situation, and it prompted a response from Cardale Jones, right? And I immediately my mind goes to, what is Nick Saban of all people thinking? By the way, she then deletes it. Here it is. If you're not confident to play, then say it. I call BS on the COVID cases. They're just worried about their quarterback and want him to have more time to heal. If he's hurt, put in your backup. You don't see us postpone the rest of the season to wait for Waddle. Bye. And then Cardale Jones responds, sure you want to face another backup from OSU? You know what happened the last time, right? When Cardale Jones did his thing. So I think, of all people, Nick Saban has to deal with this in his own family. What do you think is going on there right now?
I will say Cardale Jones's troll job is the best I've seen since last Sunday when Stephen A. went after the Cowboys for the umpteenth time this year. I really would have liked to have seen Nick Saban's expression. But I will say I've been in Saban's office before when his children have called, and I don't want to state the obvious. He loves his kids, but he's a parent, and I think every parent watching right now has probably been down this road before. Kristen, she would make a great sports commentator because she does not hold back. So maybe if you guys are ever looking for a fill-in on First Take, she would be good. But I'm sure he was nonplussed by the situation to be charitable. But I also think Saban probably shrugged it off. I think he's so laser-focused on Monday night, wrapping this season up, keeping all the pieces together and trying to win his seventh national championship, that he probably did not let it affect him very much.
Paul, Justin Fields had an amazing performance against Clemson. He did take a big hit, though, that did require an injection. So Fields was asked about his injury after the game, and here's what he had to say about that. He said, "They didn't really tell me anything. I took like a shot or two in the medical tent and ran back out there. But I mean, it's pretty much my whole right torso that's messed up and a little bit of my hip." So what do you think about this quote from Fields?
Well, I think the obvious what he's trying to say is, yeah, I got hurt, but I'm fine. But when you get shot up to stay in a game, it's not unheard of. It's fairly commonplace, but it does indicate a bigger problem. And I think as we get closer to Monday night, all eyes are going to be on Justin Fields. What is his health? Because he played not only a great game against Clemson, he played the game of his life. And you have to do that to beat Alabama, not because their defense is so great. It's not. It's by Alabama standards, it's a better than average defense. But their offense is all world. If you watch the Heisman last night, only three of the top five players in the voting are on that Alabama offense. They had a bad game against Notre Dame and only scored 31 points. I mean, they average 49 points a game, and if they score in the 40s, it really doesn't matter. Justin Fields and Ohio State probably would not be able to keep up. So if he is less than perfect in that game, the Buckeyes are going to be challenged to stay on the same field. And I don't mean that as a blowout, but just score for score. That's what you have to do with Alabama. So I think it's the story of the game. It's hard for me to believe that he will be 100%. I don't think anyone in Buckeye land is really telling us anything, because it doesn't serve much purpose to say the guy's banged up, he has bruised ribs, he has whatever, but it's pretty obvious he does.